Matt.
This is Pat.
Hey, we got a great program today. We've got, some interesting things.
Yeah, we're going to talk about one of the biggest government welfare programs for corporate America. Unneeded, unseen, and unnecessary.
And how it might impact us all in the next downturn. Plus, we have a caller who joined us who's retiring in a few years. Should she reduce her 401k or increase some of the risk? Stick around for the answer.
And now, nationally recognized financial experts Scott Hansen and Pat McClain of Hansen McClain Advisors. It's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hansen McClain's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hansen.
I'm Pat McClain. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, glad you are taking some time to be part of our lives on this weekend. And both myself and my co-host, Pat here, we're both financial advisors, chartered financial consultant, certified financial planner. We spend our weekdays helping people like yourself plan their financial futures and come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. And glad you are here. And we've got a good show today. I believe we do anyway.
I think so.
The stuff that Pat and I spent hours and hours in our show prep, going through many
documents,
myriad of topics, and it's pretty exciting.
Oh,
I mean, I had trouble sleeping last night. I woke up thinking about the show, the wonderful things we've got.
Enough. Let's just move on to the topic at hand.
Anyway,
let's talk about the markets a little bit. What do you think? Let's talk about the U.S. equity market.
Yeah. I knew that's where you're going.
Yeah, let's talk about the U.S. equity market.
My first thought is how the if you hear the reports from what you in the media, whether you hear it on a radio program or the TV or you see it on the, they talk about like a market had a big fall off because it was down 80 points or whatever.
Yes.
As the markets march higher and higher, 100 points is not even a half a percent anymore.
Yeah, as a percentage, the dollar, the number figure doesn't matter as much.
So, for example, is a 500-point decline a big deal today?
2.5%.
It's 2.5%, but it's the same as a 250-point climb would have been late 90s.
Yeah.
Or the same as a 100-point decline would have been in the early 90s.
Here's what I find most interesting is the companies, people need to recognize that the markets over relatively short periods of time are driven by emotion, of crowd.
Momentum.
Of crowds, right? And what has changed fundamentally since the first of the year that has caused these markets to rally so much? In the companies themselves, not much, other than the expectations that it's going to be a more friendly business environment. But does that still warrant? Does that still warrant this sort of a run-up?
Not friendly for everybody.
That's correct.
Not if you're in the import business.
That's correct.
Right?
Yeah. Not friendly for everyone.
Heck, even the automotive business, who knows?
It's an interesting phenomenon.
But we've gone through this period, really since the election, where we've had these increases. And they just kind of, they feel like this is never going to end.
Which is, the risk is increasing in the markets. Why can I say that the risk is increasing in the markets?
Because the prices are growing faster than the underlying earnings.
Exactly. That's
all it is.
When you buy a stock, when you invest in a company, be it your own little business or
gas station at the corner
or Intel or Google or Chevron, Tesla, or Nordstrom's or whatever, what are you buying? You're buying the future earnings.
That's the only reason you'd buy it.
Not today's earnings.
Or you might buy breakup value.
You could buy breakup value.
You could buy the underlying assets, book value, you can scrap the company off for.
People aren't buying them in this market. There's not a lot of breakup value in these companies. They're earnings. So you're buying the future earnings.
You also might be buying under the greater fool theory. You find some greater fool who'll pay more for it in the future than you paid for it today.
Which is a pure momentum play.
Correct.
Which is that someone is going to actually pay more than what you paid for it.
So financial advisors, almost all financial advisors talk about long-term investments, right? They say things like, Real estate should be a long-term investment. The stock market should be a long-term investment. Why? It's not because you necessarily need a long-term to grow. It's because over short-term, it's anyone's guess what direction things are going to be going. So we've seen the U.S. stock market go up incredibly high over the last couple months. Just a couple little slips here and there. But overall...
But who's one of the major buyers of the U.S. stock market? Right? So we're looking at Federal Reserve flow of funds data. And what this does is they look
at... Which is always a fun thing to look at.
Hey, listen, go get the kids. Get them in here. They need to hear this. What the Federal Reserve's flow of funds data looks at is how much new equity or how much new stocks were issued, not necessarily by an IPO or an initial public offering, but maybe companies are actually issuing more stocks. They do, if they need more capital, they do one of two things. They issue more stocks or they borrow money. They issue bonds. So the flow of funds looks at how much new stocks were issued and how much were actually bought back.
This company's been buying back their shares.
Yeah. So if a company has a pool of money and they say, oh, what do I do with this? There's three things they could do with it. They could give it back to the shareholders, just send them a check that says, hey, you know, Mr. Hansen, you own 1% of this company. Here's a check.
We don't know what to do with all this cash.
We got too much of it. That's one thing. They could look out to see whether they should deploy it inside their own company, which is, do we build a new factory or do we acquire another company or another product line in order to grow the business? Or do we buy back our own shares?
Or pay down debt.
Or pay down debt.
Fourth thing. But recapitalize essentially what you're getting.
Yes, but there's not a ton. At this low interest rates, there's not a ton of companies.
No one's paying back
that are paying down debt.
No, if anything, they're taking on debt. Companies like Apple that have boatloads of cash.
So this the flow of funds show that in the last three quarters, there was a negative almost $1.3 trillion of net equity issuance, which means companies bought back $1.3 trillion.
So there's less
stocks
to buy,
which means
supply and demand. If anyone took Econ 101 in college, remember there's as the supply decreases, if the demand even stays the same, you'll have prices increase.
And for the year, this year, it looks like the number's going to be a little bit higher in terms of net equity.
But so, Pat, don't worry because we have good IPOs like Snap.
Wow, that's a hole. They're trying
Snapchat.
Snapchat. There's a ghost on their thing for a reason. their symbol is a ghost.
Oh, who knows?
They still don't know how to make money on it. They're asking some, I was reading an article this morning about it. Just huge, huge market capitalization. So our point in going through this little exercise is don't believe because the markets are doing well.
That they're going to do well tomorrow.
Or that there's less risk than there was before the current administration or any administration. You have a run-up like this? It causes people like us to step back and say,
well, let's face it, given the first few weeks of this administration, there's some that's saying that the administration may not continue for a full 4 years.
Well, so. I won't weigh in on that, but I can tell you that certainly is business friendly, and that's probably one of the reasons it is large business friendly.
Sort of. It's a strange. Anyway,
The markets believe it's business friendly.
Well, people have an excuse to buy up stocks right now. We know that.
Yeah.
Right? We certainly know that,
and we've got
look. Most people should have a portion of their portfolio in equities. No question about it.
Yeah. And the question is always how much?
How much of your... And so the fact that if you need money within the next 5 years, maybe you're looking at buying a different home to live in, or perhaps you're retiring, or maybe you've got your kid going off to school in 2 years. If the money's needed in 5 years or less, it should not be in stocks. I don't care what company it is. I don't care how much the company's gone up. I don't care how much the index of the ETF you've got has gone up. If it's money's needed within 5 years, it's not. And the part of it, it's almost this feeling right now, it's not like 1999 again, but parts of it are starting to feel that way.
Well, Scott, the price to earnings ratio is the highest it's been since 2010.
Pat and I were at a company, we're not going to name the name, but in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, and a cool swank. It was a young company that
worked with them. And I come in dressed in a suit. It looked like take your dad to work day.
It did.
I could have walked up to the front counter and said, my son Trevor works here.
In any case,
it was a bizarre.
I think people need to be careful.
Be careful. And this company had a huge valuation.
Yeah. So anyway, we're going to take some calls. Handsome McLean, we love taking calls from our listeners because, look, this program is a great place to come and just get one. He's free advice. We're not going to charge you anything. It's anonymous. If you want it to be, make up a name. We don't care.
We don't have a dog in this fight.
That's right.
Right? We hope that you make
good decisions.
We're
not trying to sell you anything other than our opinion and our advice. So topics ranging from your retirement to investing to estate planning, insurances, risk management, everything in between. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, simply call us 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-242-6766. And let's go to the phones. We're starting out in Colorado with John. John, you're with Hanson McLean.
Thank you for taking my call. I certainly appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us, John.
Okay. My question deals with mortgage-backed securities. We saw what happened back in 2007, 2008. We saw the implosion. We saw mortgage-backed securities that were backed primarily on the mortgage industry, residential homes. I saw on the internet an advertisement. It had a financial banner on it, and it said Freddie and Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae were investigating or looking into the possibility of mortgage-backed securities using corporate notes and corporate income on rental properties. It kind of scared me a little bit because I lived through that. I'm in the real estate industry. So I wanted to get your input and your insight on, did we not learn anything from 2008 through 2011, or are they trying to reinvent the wheel, and will the Securities and Exchange Commission allow them to do something today that failed miserably yesterday?
So I don't know if you've seen this story further. So Blackstone, it's Blackstone, right, Pat?
Blackstone. Well, Invitation Homes, which is owned by Blackstone.
Yeah. They own about 50,000 residential homes across the United States. So after the financial crisis, a finance firm basically went in and started snapping up these homes at depressed prices.
Largest single family landlord in the country.
Okay. So this was done just with the private money.
Private
marketplace.
And borrowing money from banks or whoever else would lend
it
to.
Not government stuff.
Correct.
But they just did a deal with, was it Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac?
I think it was Fannie Mae.
$1 billion finance, essentially borrowed, that is government backed for them to finance their rental homes.
So it was done with Fannie, and it was all part of them going, trying to go public. So they had about, I don't know, what, $10 billion in single family properties and about $8 billion in debt. So they used a lot of leverage to buy this. It was 20% down, a lot of leverage to buy.
Invitation Homes.
And they go to Fannie Mae and get them to refinance this with government-backed mortgages. So, John, your question, did we learn anything?
No.
Not a thing. Why am I, as a taxpayer, subsidizing a loan? And why would they borrow from Fannie Mae, Scott? Why would Blackstone want to borrow?
That's government guarantees.
And the interest rates are lower.
Of course.
I thought maybe I had missed something. I thought maybe I was off in left field and was not.
You did miss. You missed, John, the fact. You missed, John, that you personally are now guaranteeing the repayment of debt from Blackstone's Invitation Homes for the renters.
John, what you missed is getting your own private lobbyist to call on Washington in order to get its way.
We scratch our heads too.
What happened? And frankly,
Wall Street certainly has a lot of blame during the financial crisis. But I'm not a big fan of a lot of Wall Street firms. But the fact is, when the government gets involved in a big way in any area, things tend to go awry. Look at what's happened in student loans. We got over $1.2 trillion in student loan debt now. and tuition costs are through the roof. It costs you a fortune to send a kid to school. You go through what happens when they guarantee they get artificially low interest rates. It drives up prices at an artificial level. That's unsustainable, which is what caused the financial crisis.
So if Freddie Mac jumps into this using corporate money, not necessarily secured by low to median residential income homes, but
that's
they start looking at corporate returns. Are there any, apart from having to force them to buy insurance products to produce these guarantees that are necessary on the Freddie Mac side, are there any safeguards built into this, or are we simply doing again with no boundaries? Are we simply doing again today what we did yesterday?
So if in fact, right, you had to borrow, if you, in fact you had to get insurance in order to protect the U.S. government on these, they wouldn't have done the deal because the cost of insurance would have brought the cost of the bonds up to fair market, what the market was willing to actually absorb that risk at whatever given interest rate. So the reason
discount, right.
Well, listen, I got to give it to Blackstone. It's brilliant. I mean, you can't blame
private enterprise from
brilliant
taking advantage of government programs.
I mean, that's brilliant. They've created their own government program. And as we saw, Scott, with the mortgage crisis and the meltdown, it wasn't a lack of regulations that caused it. It was a lack of enforcement of regulations.
Absolutely.
It wasn't lack of regulations. It was the lack
of
enforcement.
Even after, do you see anyone in jail? You read it once in a while about some poor local mortgage broker who gets 10 years in prison.
Let's not call them poor mortgage brokers. I'm pretty sure they did something wrong.
There's no question. But what I'm saying is it's the little guy that's been busted, not the...
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, John, are you sharing our sentiment?
I think I am. I thought, okay, what have I missed from this? What is going on that I don't understand? And you nailed it.
And here's
you put it into perspective for me.
All right. Well, glad you called, John. And I'm it's a good time to get
a good kind of
add. So I just pulled this up while we're talking this was a part of the stress test that was done from the Federal Housing Finance Agency as the Fed required stress test is done. They say during the next severe economic downturn, Fannie Mae and its sister Freddie Mac would need between $49 billion and $126 billion in taxpayer bailout money.
Under the current stress test.
Yes. And what do? We go and loan more money to...
Let's pile on.
Yeah. Private enterprise.
Appreciate the call, John.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the call.
You know what's the real irony about this, Pat, is these government mortgage companies were established to help people, Americans, own their own home.
Yes.
Is that not the whole purpose behind those?
And now they're actually helping
they're financing the landlords.
In the rentals. That's a good point.
That is...
You know what? I wish we didn't take that call because now I'm just mad. It's going to ruin the rest of the show.
It's true.
You know what? No, I am. It's frustrating because no. Okay. I'm going to let it go. As my wife says, you just got to let it go. Why don't you go for a walk? Scott, I'll be back in 10 minutes.
Well, I don't know why the government needs to be in the business of providing any sort of guarantees for mortgages.
Yeah.
Seriously. What's the point?
Oh, of any mortgages?
Yeah. It's time for them to get out.
So the point being is that, well, let's go through this in an economics. If the interest rates were allowed to come to fair market, the homes, the prices would fall.
Not if it all happened at once.
What do you mean? So if interest rates were not government backed and were no longer subsidized...
Well, the lower, but yeah.
That's the problem.
The high credit scores are not going to make a difference.
No problem.
The low credit scores. Therein lies the rub.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a socially engineered. So if it's socially engineered, really, to help those
who need the help,
it's financing you start putting it thinking about it that way.
It's to finance the people.
It's set up to help those who need the help to get into a house.
Correct.
And yet what it's doing instead is providing financing for the landlords to rent to those same people. And in doing so is driving up the prices of the homes, which in turn will drive up the rents.
Yes.
Anyway, I hope that everyone else is finding this interesting as we're getting older.
And thank you for listening.
Yes. Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Anyway, we got another call we better take. To join Hanson McLean, 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. And we do like taking calls. 1-888-2-HANSON, numerically 1-888-242-6766. And we're going to Atlanta talking with Chris. Chris, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, guys.
Hi, Chris.
Thanks for taking my call. I have kind of a tiebreaker question we'd like you to answer for us. My wife and I are in our early 50s. We have a 14-year-old daughter we'll have to put through college. But we have a pretty good income. Our combined income is a little over $200,000 a year. And we have an investable asset base of right around $850,000, and then between our 401k and our Roth and a lifetime income annuity. And we also have a little over $200,000 in cash, which we're thinking about putting towards paying off our home.
Mm-hmm.
Or instead of doing that, putting it into a defined maturity muni ETF.
What's the what's the interest rate on your home?
Oh, it's really low, 3.75.
And what do you owe on the house?
We owe $200K. So we actually have more than that in cash. I mean, we have probably about $240 in cash.
And what's the muni pay?
Muni, defined muni, it depends on the length of the maturity. From what I've seen, you get probably right around 3% if you go out to like 4 years, something like that.
So the question is, can you do an arbitrage? And our answer would be yes. You can borrow money at the tax rate you're in a higher tax bracket. So you could borrow money at 3.75%, which is what your mortgage is, and turn around and invest it in a municipal bond
at 3%.
Well,
yeah, but not if you're not going to get a 4-year investment grade AAA and muni bond at 3%.
Yeah, that's what kind of perplexes me, is where you're getting this muni bond that's paying 3% over 4 years.
It's a defined maturity muni bond ETF.
And what is it?
Yeah, but they look at the credit rating.
What's the quality of the bonds internally?
Well, they hold all sorts of different bonds. So,
what's the average credit rating?
That's the issue.
The last time I looked, it was like A-, something like that.
Yeah, that's why.
And what state are you in?
Georgia.
And so is this defined muni? Is it a national muni or state muni?
It's national. So the real question is optionality, right? I mean, would you use that money to pay off your...
Oh, I know.
Where'd the cash come from?
Just savings.
Okay. And are you maximizing your 401ks?
Yes.
Are you self-employed?
No. I work for a software company. We both work in technology.
I would pay off the mortgage.
I would disagree with you.
Why?
Because he's they're early 50s. He's got a high income. He's got a 14-year-old. He's not retiring for a number of years.
Well, hopefully in 5 years.
Oh.
Hopefully. Yeah.
If you're going to retire in 5 years, then I would agree with Pat.
Okay.
And you have a...
You're not getting comp. If you do this muni deal, you're not... I don't think
it's
you're
getting... It's not a like-to-like risk.
Things could go south and you not have a full return on that investment.
Whereas if you know the outcome, 100% certain you know the outcome if you pay down your mortgage.
And I remember the financial crisis, people had munis that went sideways on them.
Yeah, that was one of the reasons why I like the ETF is a lot of the muni bonds... and muni bond funds.
Yeah, you diversify.
Of course, they can go down in value, of course, and I don't like the risk of a rising rate environment with a bond fund.
But there's still risk with the ETF.
You've got credit quality risk.
Yeah.
So you still True. There is some degree, and you said some of, right? We don't know if what's going to happen. If I buy
sure,
this...
the risk is not zero.
The risk is not zero. What's the risk of paying down your mortgage?
Zero.
Counter by saying I would go back into the rest of the portfolio and the 401ks and the IRAs and make sure that they were any dollars outside IRAs were tax efficient as possible. And I would actually then probably buy, I would actually take those dollars that I was putting towards the mortgage payment, and I would actually start investing those in a tax efficient environment.
Yeah. Probably like a, an index equity fund on the outside and some fixed income on the inside.
But in the inside of the IRAs. And you have money set aside for your daughter's.
If you weren't going to retire for another 15 years, I would argue against Pat and would have some banter and you can decide for yourself. But given how close you are, right, I think we're both in agreement. I just pay the thing off. So, Chris, appreciate the call. We're taking a quick break. If you want to join us, it's 1-888-2-HANSEN to be part of this fantastic Hanson McLean's Money Matters. 1-888-2-HANSEN. Stick around for more Hanson McLean.
Helping you take the worry out of your retirement. It's back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Well, welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. You know what's interesting, Pat, is the investing market, it's tricky because the things that look like they have little or no risk sometimes can have the bigger risk. Sometimes people think they're making the safest move and they're exposing themselves up to...
Oh, and especially if you're not being compensated a lot for that risk. So on the last call, right before the break, if you missed it, you can go to our website, HansonMcLean.com, go to the radio section. You can listen to that podcast of that last call or, in fact, the whole show. In fact, if you hear something you like here, go to HansonMcLean.com and go to the radio section. Or if you just want to see what we look like, we film this radio show because there's nothing more exciting than watching filmed radio. you can see what Scott looks like. And then you'll say, oh, he was. And then you'll say, hell, that is Pat McLean. He was a before model. So back to that, Scott. If you're close to retirement, do everything you can to pay down your mortgage. If you're close to retirement and you have the ability to pay
totally
down your mortgage.
Yes, we totally agree. And there's some advisors that say, there was some mortgage guy in our office this last week. And he was talking about some guy who did a $2 million mortgage. They got $3 million in investable assets, a $2 million mortgage. And I said, well, as a financial advisor, if the guy's got $3 million in assets, I would question why he's taking a $2 million mortgage. And he had him take money out of a house that was already paid down. He thought the guy was he said he felt he was over leveraged in his home.
Well, your home's not an investment.
Not only that, just because you borrow money, I guess it does not change the leverage. Yeah, you increase the leverage.
Yeah, your home is not, the home you live in is not an investment. The home you live in
is, you is consume it.
Shelter, you consume it.
By the way, and if you've lived there a while, you know that it takes fair care and feeding to maintain.
The basic rule of thumb is if you're close to retirement and you can pay off the mortgage, do everything you can to pay it off before you retire.
Yeah. And that's part of, actually, there's a blog that was on our website now that there's three tips that could save your retirement. That was smacking one of them. You want to read more about that. If you go to our website, HansonMcLean.com, just look at the radio button, click there, and you'll see the three tips that could save your retirement.
Yeah.
And that
and
is
those
one
are,
of them. And the other two, we're not going to tell you.
Yeah.
You have to
guess.
Find them.
Guess.
Don't guess wrong. It could cost you. 1-888-2-HANSEN to join the program. Let's talk with Lori. Lori, you're with Hanson McLean.
Oh, hi, Pat. Hi, Scott. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Lori.
I am about 3 years away from retirement, and I have I work for the state, so I have a defined retirement plan. And then I also have my Savings Plus account.
Yep.
And because I'm a few years out, I was thinking I needed to move that 401k into a more conservative investment strategy. And so I signed up for a target date 2020, because that's the year I plan to retire. But now I'm questioning that decision because I'm not planning on accessing those funds. Well,
That's part of it. Yeah, it is part of it, though. It would me, right?
It's, I mean,
that's
part just of it.
That's
yeah,
natural,
the market
human.
Was,
I mean, come on.
If the market was down 15%, you probably wouldn't be calling us.
No, you would have thought, wouldn't that brilliant?
You're probably right.
Yeah, right.
Yes, you're right.
That's, we're all
but
human. We all go through that.
Right. So, but I was hoping to have these funds as a safety net. So even though it's up, I know it can, you know, it changes. I'm concerned about that.
So, Lori,
and,
what percentage of your what percentage of your income will your pension make up in retirement?
That's 65%.
Okay. And so how much are you putting into your, and you're paying into Social Security now, or do you not?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I am.
And how much are you putting into your 401k as a percentage of pay?
Right. It used to be much higher. Now it's probably only about 8%.
Okay. So you're probably not going to draw on these 401ks. So right there, you're actually, you've done the calculations. Or better yet, go to our website and look at the video, the 7 personal decision points. And we're going to actually mail you Scott's book, The Decision mm-hmm. Points. We have a workshop coming up on the 7 personal decision points as well in Sacramento. You should attend it, especially if you're 3 or 5 years away from retirement. And the reason behind that is it's going to help you determine how much money you need in retirement, right? That's the biggest question we get from someone is, how much money do I need to retire? And our answer is, I don't know, but there's a formula that I could bring you through that you can calculate for yourself, or we could calculate for
you. And in your workshop, you have an opportunity to go through that exactly for yourself.
And you'll go through it yourself in order to figure that out. So in saying that, you're assuming you're not going to take any income off this 401k when you retire. Is that correct?
Yes, that's the plan.
And before you moved to the 2020, how was it allocated? The target date 2020, how was it allocated?
It was at 60-40 stocks on the 60.
I would have left it alone.
Okay.
Well, that's why lawyers call. So here's one way to look at things. You probably have friends your stage in life that don't work for the state and that are going to retire without a pension, correct?
Correct.
All right. So if, and I don't know what your pension is going to be, but let's assume you're going to get $30,000 a year in pension. I'm just throwing that number out there.
Okay.
In order to generate $30,000 a year in pension, you'd need $700,000 in capital, roughly?
Yep.
So that pension is worth about, and we can run the numbers different ways depending on what kind of assumptions.
But a normal life expectancy and an assumed rate of return of 4%, 4.5%?
Maybe it's 600 grand. Anyway, your pension's not exactly 30,000. It's more or less than that, whatever the case is. But so if you think about that, that's a huge chunk of capital that is set aside, taxpayer guaranteed, for your pension.
With cost of living adjustments.
With cost of living adjustments. So you think, well, if I take my 401k and add it onto that, I could look at that as my fixed income portion. And we've had people make the argument to us, say, look, I've got this pension all guaranteed. Why do I need to be conservative at all with my 401k? And they're much more aggressive. Now, the challenge was that we're humans and we look at our balances on a regular basis. And most of us don't want to watch things swing up and down that greatly. But if your plan is to let these dollars be there for something that may arise in the future, having more allocated in stocks than your 2020 target retirement fund, I think would be a prudent thing to do.
Yeah, the 2020 is probably
60 or 7% in fixed income.
Yeah.
It depends. They're all different.
Yeah. Guess is it would be between 60 and 80% in fixed income. So, Lori, I think you should go back to the 60-40 and not worry about it.
Okay.
And don't worry about it.
Just don't worry about it.
And just because you're retiring in 3 years, if you said this money is all going to go into a motorhome, well, would say don't buy it. Go rent something for a while first. But
yeah, make sure you like it.
But if you knew you were going to spend it all in 3 years, that'd be a different story. But probably worst case scenario, you're going to take a little bit of money to help supplement a pension.
And so,
worst case scenario.
Lori, I would encourage you to go to the 7 personal decision workshop if you haven't been already. And so I'm looking for the one in Sacramento.
The week of March 8th. Thursday, and Saturday. Go to HansonMcLean.com workshop. You're going to get more information on that.
Yeah, and it will just help you walk through that. I promise you it will not be a waste of your time.
And you know what, though, Lori?
I have been to one a couple of years ago, but I do want to go to another one.
Oh, they're so much better now.
It was brilliant, though, wasn't it, Lori? Highly entertaining.
It was.
Tell us how awesome we are.
Yeah. The short ball guy is really the fun one, isn't he?
All right. Appreciate the
call. Thank you, Lori.
Thanks.
We have a good.
Thank you.
We wish you well. You know what's going to happen? If she allocates to increase her stock exposure next week, the stock market will fall. That's just anytime you buy into stocks, buy an individual stock, the next day it goes down. That's just how it tends to work.
Or that's how you think it works.
Well, whatever. It's not really how it works, but. All right, 1-888-2 Hanson to join Hanson McLean. 1-888-2 Hanson. We're talking with Daryl. Daryl, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yes, thank you so much for answering my call.
Yeah, thanks for being part of Hanson McLean, Daryl.
I have a problem with my mom just passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. And I'm supposed to take care of the trust. And we just sold a property last year. It was costing me a little over $5,000 a month to keep my mom in a home. She had dementia. And so we sold this property and got approximately $450,000 for it. And
Was that her primary residence that you sold?
No. No, it was my dad's business. He passed away approximately 6 years ago.
Okay.
All right. So you sold this property and $450,000 net after taxes, and you did what with it? You can say it.
Thanks. I went to a financial service. Actually, the guy who drew up the trust for my dad is an attorney, and he has an office with a financial person in it and a CPA and a person who does trust and all that. So I thought I'd just keep it all in one office. So I went to the financial service guy, and I told him I didn't want to risk all the money in stocks because I was afraid there wouldn't be, you know, I'd lose it and there wouldn't be enough for my mother. So
that's appropriate. The risk tolerance was right.
Well,
so what did you do with the money? Where did it end up?
220 of it went into annuity.
All right. And
how old was your mother?
92.
And who was the annuitant on the annuity?
Well,
was it you?
I'm afraid so.
Okay.
And I didn't realize that at the time. I wouldn't have done that if I thought
how is he supposed to understand?
Daryl, don't beat yourself up. You're the third person in the last 6 weeks. The second on this radio, the third I've seen was exactly it. Yeah, I had the lady send the contract to see if we could get her out of it.
What does the whole term annuitant mean? How are you supposed to know? You're trying to help out your 90-some-odd-year-old mother. Property sold. You get referred to a financial person. So, you say, you don't want to risk it all. I might need some of the cash. And so they know that they can't sell an annuity to a 92-year-old. So they change it and they put the annuitant in the son's name.
So tell me how many years...
It should be. If it's not illegal, it should be. It's clearly unethical and immoral.
So you're 4 years into this annuity?
No, 1 year into it.
Oh, 1 year into the annuity.
Yes.
And what's the surrender charge on this?
I heard mention $9,000.
Oh, is that all? Not to minimize $9,000.
No, because they're usually horrendous on these.
I think it...
Oftentimes it's 10%.
Oftentimes it's... So if it was $9,000, which... And don't look at it. I'm Pat McClain here. I grew up in Carmichael. I mean, if you wore a clean plaid shirt, you could have been mayor. $9,000 on this is a percentage of the 220 is less than it's about 4%. I think that's the wrong number. I would be surprised if that was that little.
But just what the attorney told me. I haven't talked to the financial guy yet. I want to talk to you.
You do not want to talk to this financial guy. You do not want to talk to the financial guy.
I would contact the insurance company themselves.
Just
I call the Department of Insurance. What state in California? I call the California Department of Insurance.
So my guess is it's much higher than that.
I would call the California Department of Insurance. What are you looking at me like crazy?
I want to make sure that it may not be the worst annuity in the world. If it's only $9,000, it certainly was inappropriate.
Correct.
It's probably illegal. No, it's not illegal.
Well, it could have been fraud. It could have been misrepresented. Sign here, press hard, 3 copies type thing, right? I mean, you trust somebody.
Well, yes, he knew she was close to dying.
Who signed the contract? Did she?
No.
You did.
She had dementia. Yes, I did.
Yeah,
She had dementia.
Okay, so...
Yeah, but I don't think you're a sophisticated financier, right? You probably don't have a lot of experience in annuities.
And what happened to the other half of the proceeds from the sale?
I have it in stock.
Okay, perfect, perfect.
Not with the same financial guy?
Yes, unfortunately.
All right. Yeah, I
need to get out of there, right?
You're not going to. This guy isn't. This is what that was not appropriate. just call the office. Call our office. I normally don't do this on the air, but call our
office. These things you get frustrated with.
I just get frustrated. I feel bad for him. He could be my dad. Daryl could be my dad. Right? This could be happening to my dad or my brother or who.
You've seen it happen to your family members.
Actually, I have seen it happen to my family member. Daryl, call the office. We'll sit down and we will help you the best we can.
Yeah. Thank you, Brian.
All right. Daryl. Thanks. Sorry that happened.
Yeah. And it's not that all annuities are bad all the time.
Some annuities are good, but the average
consumer.
Some of
the ones that were issued years ago that had some higher guarantees and some of the.
In all fairness, we do a little sprinkling sometimes. Rarely.
I think there were six. We have 4,000 households we serve. Last year, I believe there were six contracts that
Understand.
Were done in
but,
our office.
But what's the difference is the average
consumer. And not these kind of annuities.
The average consumer can't tell the difference from good or bad. And you certainly, this stuff where they're writing them, anyway, you know how we feel about annuities. If you listen to the show for more than 4 minutes, you know how we feel about annuities.
Well, anyway, so we're going to take. We are moving on and having a guest on the program. And I'm actually excited about this guest, Kevin Knoll. And Kevin Knoll is a president of a company called PiTech, but they run a program called Money Guide Pro. And Money Guide Pro is a, before you say, it's a financial planning software package that financial advisors use. So Kevin's firm sells to financial advisors, things like Money Guide Pro, Hanson McLean is. We use some Money Guide Pro. But it's not so much the software we're going to talk about. It's really kind of how financial planning has changed over the years and with goal-based planning and whatnot. And so Kevin Knoll is joining us. Kevin, welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, glad you are here. And I've known Kevin a number of years from industry conferences. And I know that their firm does a lot of good work for our industry, just at a top level. So here's my curiosity, Kevin. So I don't know if you heard the last caller who joined us, whose mother passed away, and someone who called himself some sort of financial planner, 92-year-old woman, took the proceeds of a property and put it in an annuity. So I imagine you see all kinds of quote-unquote financial advisors out there. So maybe this is a loaded question. What percentage of the industry do you think are competent, caring financial advisors that truly follow a planning process?
That's a hard question to answer. What I would say is, I think the majority of the industry is absolutely doing their best to try and render really good, sound advice. But the industry has sort of evolved over the years in that, you know, it really started out more of as a sales kind of driven culture, and so financial planning today is completed by, you know, a portion of all of the advisors, but you know, there's still a portion that are selling rather than rendering advice. So, you know, the best analogy I can give you is, you know, I think most advisors want to render good sound advice, but imagine if you went to the doctor and the first thing they said was, here's the medicine, and didn't ask you questions about whether, you know, what hurt and what your symptoms are. That would seem really crazy and backwards, but there's still a fair amount of that going on. And yet others have made the shift, you know, to first find out where it hurts, where the need is, before they, you know, determine what's appropriate.
Yeah, it's interesting. The financial planning, so I've been in the industry a long time, but it's a lot of it evolved back in the tax shelter days of limited partnerships that a lot of financial planners, if you look kind of the Financial
the
Planning
of
Association, that's what a lot of it was. But fortunately, things are moving in the right direction.
I'm sure that in your software that you're tracking trends of what recommendations are taking place with clients. What do you think the two biggest changes in the last 3 years have been in terms of recommendations? Is it to pay down mortgages? Is it to become more tax efficient? What do you think those things are, Kevin?
Well, I think one of the most significant trends that we've seen is that, you know, advisors are now starting to focus on the client's goals. So, you know, again, and as my previous kind of medical analogy, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to just prescribe the medicine before you know what the need is. So probably the most obvious trend, particularly in the last 18 or 24 months, with all the talk around fiduciary and doing the, you know, right thing and acting in your client's best interest, has been around how do we better understand what the client really needs. And so, you know, each client, each person, each investor is different. You can't say the right thing to do is pay down the mortgage or pay down the credit card bills or what have you. You know, it's hard to just draw a line and say this is the right thing for everybody. But I would say the most obvious trend is, you know, people are starting to really focus on the goals and the needs, and then moving towards, you know, more towards that advice and the recommendations. I would say the other thing is that investors are becoming more educated, and, you know, they're no longer willing to just take at face value what is said to them. And I think that's probably a good thing, not unlike what WebMD did for the medical community, in essence, creating a situation where investors know more before they meet with a doctor any more than you might know more.
Although, Kevin, every time I'm looking online for some medical condition I have, I know it's always something really bad I find out. I'm sure I've got it. I'm reading it's like, it's not just the common cold. I'm dying.
That's right.
You must be a joy to live with.
I tell the kids, I last time I had a nasty cold, I said, come say your last final respects to your father. This is the big one.
But the,
how old are
the
you?
Reality is,
I'm trying to be funny when I'm not. I got a fever and I'm still funny.
So back to you, our guest, Kevin.
But you know, it's an interesting point though, Kevin. So we're in an age when information's out there on everything, right? And you brought up web. So the information on our medical stuff is out there. And same thing when it comes to finance. So I don't care what issue you're dealing with. You Google it and you're going to have a good, you know, a ton of different answers. And I find it can be actually overwhelming from a consumer standpoint because there's so much information about so many things. Like, what do they look for? What do they listen to? And still, you know, you talk about goals-based planning and making sure people understand what their objective is first, and then whatever products or services secondary. It still seems to me that everything kind of comes at investors from a product first. Here's the hot stock. Well, here's why the stock market's going up, or, you know, et cetera.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. Again, you know, it doesn't make sense to start with the solution until you know what's wrong. And so, when I read these headlines and magazines and on the internet and so forth, you can find anything you want on the internet. Doesn't mean it's true necessarily, but you can find, you know, information out there. But particularly when it comes to financial planning, just because one thing is maybe a good idea for a small portion of the population, it doesn't mean that it's right for everybody. And, you know, I heard your last caller. I mean, I know a fair amount about the topic. Just because an annuity might be right for one person does not mean it's right for 100 other people. And that's the hard part in our industry, is there's still a lot of people just focused on selling a product.
And you just recently came out with a book, Exploring Advice, What You Need to Know About Good Financial Advice and a Quality Financial Plan and the Role of Fiduciary. And you you interviewed a lot of different people in the industry, a lot of financial advisors. Were there any big takeaways, surprises that you had in doing that book?
I guess the biggest takeaway was...
Besides how hard it is to do a book?
Yeah. I think maybe the biggest takeaway was we interviewed about 1,700 CFPs, PhDs, MBAs, the like, and you all, of course, contributed a chapter, which I'll thank you for that. But in doing so, we asked them all the same three questions, and we got 1,700 different answers to the same three questions. So what is good advice, or what is a quality financial plan? We got 1,700 different answers to each of those questions. And what that says to me is everybody's doing something differently, and nobody really knows necessarily what the right answer is, particularly at the end investor level.
Wow.
That is actually amazing.
I don't know. It's kind of frightening.
Was ours the only right one?
There's like a bell curve.
Were we right at the top of that bell curve? I think we were. You could say it, Kevin.
You all have a great chapter. Everyone.
There we go. That's all we were looking for. We just need a little bit of self.
So, all right. So 1,700 advisors you got the answers for, and I don't know how many financial advisors you've met in your career, because you have a financial planning software program that you sell to financial advisors, right? So you've met more than anyone listening to this program tenfold, right?
Would ever want to meet.
What should somebody look for when selecting an advisor who's going to help them develop a quality financial plan?
Well, I think it varies, of course, by each individual. I mean, you ought to find someone.
You ought to be in politics. Every answer you got is
everything is. Well, it would never work in politics today. You should have been a politician 10 years ago.
let me give you some specifics then. You know, first and foremost, you need to find somebody that listens. And at the end of the day, if you walk into a meeting and meet with an advisor and they spend the first hour talking about themselves, it's probably the wrong person. You know, find someone that's listening, that hears what your needs and concerns are and addresses those concerns and those needs before they go ahead and provide you a solution right away. You know, it's one thing to go in and get that intro meeting. It's another when your second and third meetings, that advisor is still talking about who, you know, what they do. You know, I think what you need to do is get into a position where you are comfortable with that individual, you trust them, and you're certain that they're actually hearing what both you and your significant other are worried about. Because oftentimes, looks, you know, it's not always that you and your spouse agree on everything. Frankly, my wife and I can't even agree on curtains. So, you know, I'm certain that there's going to be a little back and forth, and you want that person to be respectful and hear you both.
Yeah, I think that's good advice. And Kevin, I appreciate you being on Hanson McLean's Money Matters. If you'd like a copy of Kevin's book or to learn more about who he's talking about, his website, exploringadvice.com, can be found right on a link on our website at hansonmclean.com. Just click on radio button and you'll get a link to Kevin Knoll's website there. So, Kevin, appreciate you taking some time to join us today.
Thank you so much. Make sure everybody you read chapter 23.
That's okay, God's chapter.
I don't know if it is or not, but Kevin's such a good politician. He just
so before we go, we've got these upcoming workshops, the 7 personal decision points for retirement transition. You could find them at hansonmclean.com, hansonmclean.com. We have them in Sacramento, March 8th, 9th, and the 11th. San Francisco Bay Area on March 15th, 16th, 18th, and Denver on the same dates, 15, 16, and 18. And if you attend, you'll receive a complimentary copy of Scott's book, Personal Decision Points. Once again, you'll find that at hansonmclean.com.
That's right. And of course, this music means we are out of time. We're here every weekend at this station at the same time. Or you might be listening to the podcast, which is great. If you're not subscribed to it now, you should. Go to hansonmclean.com radio and subscribe to the podcast. We'll see you next week. This has been Hanson McLean.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.